Hare Krishna. So today is a very special day. Do you know, Prabhu, what's so special about today? You don't? Someone said something? Yes. It's the day the International Society for Krishna Consciousness was officially incorporated as a society. So I feel especially honored and privileged to be able to speak on this topic today. It is a momentous occasion because ISKCON means so much for practically all of us. So we'll speak a little bit about how some of the background to how ISKCON was incorporated and the actual event itself. One devotee once, or my Guru Maharaj once told me, you cannot really know Prabhupada without knowing the history of ISKCON. So it's important for us that we understand these events because it shows a great deal about Srila Prabhupada's struggles and his vision for the society when we understand this history. I've also been given the liberty by Nishkinchan Prabhu to select a verse of my choice for today's class. So up on the board, we have a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And later on, I'll explain the significance of this verse in the context of the anniversary of the incorporation. They're very much linked because Prabhupada revealed certain aspects of his inner thoughts about ISKCON in relation to this verse. So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, Chapter 8, chapter entitled The Talks Between the Lord and Ramananda Rai, and text number 70. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be had even by pious activity in hundreds and thousands of lives. It can be attained only by paying one price, that is, intense greed to obtain it. If it is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. The previous two verses are included in the Pajavali 13:14, in an anthology compiled by Srila Rupa Goswami. Verse 69 refers to devotional service in faith, and verse 70, which is the current verse, refers to devotional service rendered out of intense greed. The first is devotional service rendered in accordance with the regulative principles, and the second refers to spontaneous loving service of the Lord without extraneous endeavor. Henceforth, the basic principle underlying the talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai will be spontaneous loving service to the Lord. The regulator principles, according to the injunctions of the Shastras, are necessary insofar as one's original dormant Krishna consciousness is not spontaneously awakened. An example of spontaneous action is the flowing of rivers towards into the ocean. Nothing can stop this flow of water. Similarly, when one's dormant Krishna consciousness is awakened, it spontaneously flows to the lotus feet of Krishna without impediment. Whatever will be spoken henceforth by Ramananda Rai, based on spontaneous love, will be agreeable to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Lord will ask him more and more about this subject. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malita Miena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yatapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Prihe Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pushtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastachade Shatarine. So the verse again, pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be had even by pious activity in hundreds and thousands of lives. It can be attained only by paying one price, that is, intense greed to obtain it. If it is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. So, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness was inaugurated on 13th of July, 1966. But we are observing it today because we are observing it according to the Vedic calendar. But according to the Western calendar, it was incorporated on 13th of July, 1966. There was a whole lot of events, significant events, which led up to this momentous day. And I would just try to recount some of these events because it gives some insight into Srila Prabhupada's endeavors and struggles to obtain, to arrive at this point. Now, traditionally, for a disciple, we would continue our endeavors to spread Krishna consciousness or our activities in the society of our guru or spiritual master or our param guru. Like for us, we would never think of starting our own society. We will function and operate and live in Srila Prabhupada's society. So Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj, he had his society, the Gaudiya Math. So one would naturally think that Srila Prabhupada would focus his endeavors to spread Krishna consciousness and to execute the orders of his spiritual master in the Gaudiya Math. But it so worked out that after the departure of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, the Gaudiya Math fell into disarray. There was factions that were formed, there was infighting, and the entire mission of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur became diminished. And Srila Prabhupada was actually quite disgusted by the affairs that took place after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's departure. And as much as possible, he tried to function. But he came to the realization that it was not really possible to execute the order given to him by his Guru Maharaj in that society. So Srila Prabhupada began to preach, and as a vanaprastha, he came to Jhansi in the early 50s. And in Jhansi, Srila Prabhupada made some endeavors. And he was successful in forming the League of Devotees. And Prabhupada had a great vision for the League of Devotees. The League of Devotees, the Memorandum of Association, was officially registered in Lucknow on the 4th of February, 1953. And if one reads the Memorandum of Association, one can see Srila Prabhupada's vision of the League of Devotees being an international society, a movement that would spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Later on, we will discuss the seven purposes of ISKCON as written in the Association of Articles of ISKCON. And we will see and we will discuss that how these seven purposes were actually extracted almost verbatim from the documents of the League of Devotees. So Prabhupada, he had this vision. In fact, Prabhupada went so far to explain or to propagate this vision by putting an article, an advertisement in the newspaper of Calcutta, one of the big newspapers of Calcutta. And this advertisement read, entitled Educational. Wanted, candidates from any nationality to qualify themselves as real Brahmins for preaching the teachings of Bhagavad Gita for all practical purposes throughout the whole world. Deserving candidates will be provided with free boarding and lodging. Apply, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, founder and secretary of the League of Devotees, Bharati Bhavan, P.O., Jhansi, U.P. So Prabhupada put this advertisement in the newspaper, welcoming people to join him in this worldwide mission formed in the League of Devotees. But unfortunately, or maybe we should say for our good fortune, the League of Devotees never really established itself. And there were two main reasons why the League of Devotees never really got established in a big way. The first reason is Srila Prabhupada needed resources. And besides money, the main resource that Srila Prabhupada looked for was men, young men. And he would go to the Indian families and said, just give me, you have many sons, just give me one son. Just give me one of your sons for this League of Devotees. And they would say, no, you know, we want to get our sons educated. But we can see in India, all of these sons, they get educated, but they have no jobs and they work as rickshawalas. But still, none of them would give Prabhupada one son. And then the building that Prabhupada was using, the Bharati Bhavan, which originally the person that owned it, he said, Swamiji, I give you use of this building indefinitely. But one politician, one lady politician, she saw this building as an opportunity to establish a center for training women in arts and crafts so that they could earn. And using a political influence, she influenced the owner to the point that he gave Prabhupada an ultimatum to pay 500 rupees or to be sent away. And Prabhupada was so poor, he couldn't even afford 500 rupees. So eventually, the whole League of Devotees dwindled away. And Prabhupada left Jhansi and he went to live with some of his godbrothers. And then he tried to get them involved to reignite and to invigorate the League of Devotees, but they were not so interested. So that endeavor of Srila Prabhupada was unfortunately, or fortunately for us, unsuccessful. And then events led up eventually to Srila Prabhupada miraculously getting a sponsorship to go to America. And by coaxing Sumati Moraji, he got a ticket, a free passage on the Jaluduta, and then he sailed to America. And he arrived in the United States of America on September 17th, 1965, firstly in Boston. The Jaluduta docked in Boston for one night, and Prabhupada stayed on the ship, although he went out and he had a look in Boston. And then the next day, the 18th of September, the Jaluduta set sail for New York City. And when Prabhupada arrived in New York City, he arrived in New York City on the 19th of September, and then he caught a bus to Butler, Pennsylvania, where he stayed in the home of Sally and, Gopal Agarwal, yes. And he stayed there from the 19th to the 30th. And then he left Pennsylvania and he went to New York City. And in New York City, he had no fixed residence. He wandered around from the 18th to the 31st. He stayed in the ashram of Dr. Mishra. And eventually, he managed to move to the Bowery. And he stayed in the Bowery. For such an aristocratic person like Srila Prabhupada, it was really sad. You know, he had to step over or walk past drunks who would urinate and pass feces in their old clothing. And that stink was just so unbearable. But Srila Prabhupada had to go through this, and he stayed in the Bowery, in the loft. And then one day, David, who he was staying with, was taking drugs, became completely berserk. And Prabhupada was afraid, so in the middle of the night, he just ran out of the apartment with nowhere to go, without even taking any of his belongings. He just ran into, and he had no place to go in the middle of the night. And he followed Carl Jurgens, and Carl said, "Swamiji, you come and you stay with us in a small apartment." But Carl's wife, Eva, was a very staunch feminist. Very quickly, she was against the Swamiji, and she began to be a bit aggressive. And Prabhupada moved into the apartment of Michael, Grant, and Jan. And eventually, Michael found the storefront on 26 Second Avenue. And that apartment, it had a storefront at the bottom, and it had an apartment on the top. And the rent for the storefront was $125 per month, and the apartment was $71 per month. So Prabhupada secured that apartment. But even before Prabhupada secured this apartment, as soon as he arrived in America, he was already thinking, I need to start a society. I need to start a society. And on the 27th of October 1965, that was, he arrived in September, and in October 27th, he wrote one letter to Sumati Moraji. And in this letter he wrote, he said, "I am thinking of bringing a Sankirtan party from India." Actually, Prabhupada never thought that he could form a Sankirtan party in America. So he wrote to Sumati Moraji, "I'm thinking of bringing a Sankirtan party from India, but I do not know how to do it." And then he wrote, "Unless there is an organized party or association, it is very difficult to do it." So Prabhupada, he sort of had this realization that unless he formed a society, an association, it was going to be very difficult for him to really establish anything. And then he wrote to her. He said, recently, one dancer from Madras, Bala Sarasvati, came and went. And he said, I went to see the show. And he said, normally I don't go to see such shows. But I went to see this dancer from Madras just to see the mode of reception that the American public had for this Krishna consciousness. And then he wrote, what I want, that immediately a society for this purpose is meaning Bhagavatam preaching work, immediately I want a society for this purpose may be formed, and that will be recognized by the government for cultural activity. So Prabhupada, you know, he wanted the society to form almost immediately. And he said he wanted the society to be formed because it will be recognized by the government for cultural activity. Later on, I'll be speaking a little bit more about what Prabhupada's understanding and definition of cultural is. Culture, what Prabhupada meant. So Prabhupada had this vision. So as soon as he got his own place on 26 Second Avenue, he started to consider how to establish this society. And Carl Jurgens, he had a friend. So I'll read from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, the second volume, Breaking Ground. But to register ISKCON legally as a non-profit tax-exempt religion required money and a lawyer. So that was Prabhupada's first obstacle, money and a lawyer, which he had neither of. Carl Jurgens had already gained some experience in forming religious, political and social welfare groups. And when he had met Prabhupada in the Bowery, he had agreed to help. He had contacted his lawyer, Stephen Goldsmith. Stephen Goldsmith, a young Jewish lawyer with a wife and two children and an office on Park Avenue, was interested in spiritual movements. When Carl told him about Prabhupada's plans, he was immediately fascinated by the idea of setting up a religious corporation for an Indian Swami. He visited Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, and they discussed incorporation, tax exemption, Prabhupada's immigration status, and Krishna consciousness. Mr. Goldsmith visited Prabhupada several times. Once he had brought his children, who liked the soup, Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki, Jai Shishi Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Jai Shishi Gonita Ki, Jai. Jai. Once he brought his children, who liked the soup the Swami cooked, he began attending the evening lectures where he was often the only non-hippie member of the congregation. One evening, having completed all the legal groundwork and being ready to complete the procedures for incorporation, Mr. Goldsmith came to Prabhupada's lecture and Kirtan to get signatures from the trustees for the new society. So this was July 11th. Prabhupada is lecturing in the storefront. Mr. Goldsmith, wearing slacks and a shirt and a tie, sits on the floor near the door, listening earnestly to the lecture, despite the distracting noises from the neighborhood. Prabhupada has been explaining how scholars mislead innocent people with non-devotional interpretations of the Bhagavad Gita. And now, in recognition of the attorney's respectable presence, as if to catch Mr. Goldsmith's attention better, he introduces him to the subject of the talk. I will give you a practical example of things, of how things are misinterpreted, just like our president. He wasn't even a president, but Prabhupada said, just like our president, Mr. Goldsmith. He knows that expert lawyers, by interpretation, can do so many things. When I was in Calcutta, there was a rent tax passed by the government, and some expert lawyer changed the whole thing by his interpretations. The government had to reenact the whole law because their purpose was foiled by the interpretation of the lawyer. So we are not for the foiling the purpose of Krishna, for which the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. But unauthorized persons are trying to foil the purpose of Krishna. Therefore, that is unauthorized. All right, Mr. Goldsmith, you can ask anything. So Prabhupada planned the whole thing. He's lecturing and then suddenly he says, Mr. Goldsmith, you can say anything. And Mr. Goldsmith stands. And to the surprise of the people gathered, he makes a short announcement, asking for signers on an incorporation document for the Swami's new religious movement. So there are these hippies sitting in the audience, and this lawyer stands up, and he says, I want some signatures for incorporating, eh? And they're like stunned, you know, what's going on here? Prabhupada, they are present here. You can take the addresses now. Mr. Goldsmith, I can take them now, yes? Prabhupada, yes you can. Bill, you can give your address. And Raphael, you can give yours. And Don, you can give, and Roy and Mr. Green. As the meeting breaks up, those called on to sign as trustees come forward, standing around in the little storefront waiting to leaf curiously through the papers as the lawyer has produced from his thin attaché, and to sign as he directs. Yet not a soul among them is committed to Krishna consciousness. Not one of them. And Brahmananda Swami says, a lot of them were not following the regulative principles. Many of them were chain smokers. Even Michael Grant was smoking a pipe. They were not following the regulative principles. And here they were being asked to sign as trustees for this international society for Krishna consciousness. Mr. Goldsmith meets his quota of signers. A handful of sympathizers with enough reverence towards the Swami to want to help him. The first trustees will hold office for a year until the first annual general meeting of the corporation. A Michael Grant, who puts down his name and address without even reading the document. Michael's girlfriend Jan and James Green. No one seriously intends to undertake any formal duties as trustee of the religious society. But they are happy to help the Swami by signing the fledgling society into legal existence. According to law, a second group of trustees will assume office for the second year. They are Paul Gardner, Roy and Don. The trustees for the third year are Carl Jurgens, Bill Epstein and Raphael. Actually, I think it was only Michael Grant and Jan that remained with Prabhupada and became devotees. The rest of them all fell away. But they were trustees, appointed trustees. None of them knew exactly what the half a dozen legal-sized typed papers meant, except that Swamiji is forming a society. Why? For tax exemption. So their vision was, Swami was forming the society, why? For tax exemption. In case someone gives a big donation. And for other benefits an official religious society might receive. But these purposes hardly seemed urgent to even relevant to the present situation. Who's going to make donations except maybe for Mr. Goldsmith who had any money? And they were thinking, even as far as donations concerned, who's going to make a donation to Swamiji? We don't have, maybe Mr. Goldsmith is the only person. Mukunda Goswami in his book Miracle on Second Avenue, he said when he was signing, he was thinking, oh, he just doesn't know what's Prabhupada on about here. He just doesn't know, he couldn't fathom what Swamiji was on about. But Prabhupada is planning for the future. And he's planning for much more than just tax exemptions. He's trying to serve his spiritual predecessors and fulfill the spiritual prediction of a spiritual movement that is to flourish for 10,000 years in the midst of the age of Kali. Within the vast age of Kali period, which is to last 432,000 years, the 1960s are but an insignificant moment. Then I'll go on to the seven purposes. Actually, according to Brahmananda Swami, these seven purposes, as written in the incorporation document of ISKCON, was written by Ayagriva Prabhu. But actually they were taken almost verbatim from the document from the League of Devotees. So actually Prabhupada wrote it, but Ayagriva just sort of penned it. The purposes stated within ISKCON's articles of incorporation reveal Prabhupada's thinking. There are 7 points similar to those given in the prospectus for the League of Devotees he formed in Jhansi, India in 1953. The attempt had been unsuccessful, yet his purposes remain unchanged. 7 purposes of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Who among us knows all the 7 purposes off the top of the head? You know it, Mishra Maharaj. Okay. You like to tell us? Okay. He's a director. Okay, it's not. You probably know it because, you know, impromptu I'm asking you to do it. Yeah. It'll all come back. I'll read it and probably it'll all come back to you. So these are the 7 purposes of ISKCON. A, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. Now, while I read this, it'll be nice if we can just reflect in our own minds and consciousness how much we think, both individually and collectively, we are fulfilling these purposes. B, to propagate a consciousness of Krishna as it is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. C, to bring the members of the society together with each other and nearer to Krishna, the prime entity, thus to develop the idea within the members and humanity at large that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of Godhead, Krishna. D. To teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, congregation, chanting of the holy name of God, as revealed in the teachings of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. E. To erect for the members and for the society at large a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Godhead. F. To bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler and more natural way of life. And G. With a view towards achieving the aforementioned processes, to publish and distribute periodicals, magazines, books, and other writings. So the last one is actually very significant. Prabhupada says, with a view of achieving all of the previous 6, how? To publish and distribute periodicals, magazines, books, and other writings. So Prabhupada saw the printing and distributing of books and literatures as the prime purpose of ISKCON, a purpose of which, if it was fulfilled, would automatically lead to all of the other purposes being fulfilled. Actually, in one letter to Ansaduta, Srila Prabhupada once wrote, he said, the institution may fail. The temples may fail. He said, but my books will never fail and they will exist for the next 10,000 years. And actually, that is a very interesting point that he's made. One very famous scholar, Joseph T. McConnell, who was one of the preeminent secular scholars on Gaudiya Vaishnavism, he wrote the foreword to the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which was written by Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. And he wrote an essay entitled Institutionalizing Prema. And in that essay, he gave a definition of what is an institution. And he said, an institution means that by which one transfers and exports culture across time and geography. What is an institution? An institution is a means to transfer and export culture across time and geography. And then he went on to say, culture means that which is real, right, and valuable. And as Prabhupada writes, reality distinguished from illusion for the highest welfare of all. So Joseph T. McConnell, he says, actually there's two types of institution. There's the hard institution, and then there's the soft institution. The hard institution is the temples and the communities. And the soft institution is the Vaishnava literature. And it is really the soft institution which is the real mechanism to export and transfer culture. Because these literatures can go far and wide. And this is what takes Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So ISKCON, as an institution, we can see is both hard and soft. Actually, there's so much to say, and I wanted to say, but time's up. I'll stop here. We can reflect on today's occasion on I'll just say two last things. Prabhupada, my Guru Maharaj Giriraj Swami once asked Prabhupada, you are here now, but after you leave, how will the society go on? And if there's mistakes and deviations, how will the society go on? And Prabhupada said, you are a leader. If you see something not quite right, you stay and you correct it. So Prabhupada's mood was, if you see anything wrong, if you are not prepared to do something to correct it, don't criticize. Only say something and only criticize if you are prepared to walk the talk. If you're prepared to stand up and do something about it. But never leave and from the outside criticize. Do something. And then the second part is once Prabhupada, in his final days, he was in Vrindavan. And my Guru Maharaj, Giriraj Swami Maharaj, he was sleeping on the roof. And in the middle of the night, Prabhupada called for him. And Prabhupada And Maharaj says, I rushed to Prabhupada's room. The silent intensity in there heightened my anticipation. I didn't know what to expect, why Prabhupada had called me, what did he want to say? His health was so delicate that we thought any word he uttered might be his last. Srila Prabhupada was lying silently in an internal state of consciousness. I offered my obeisances, sat close beside him, and waited in silence. Then in a very soft voice, Prabhupada asked, So, do you think this movement will go on after I leave? I was surprised that he had called me in the middle of the night to ask me this question. But I replied, Yes, as long as the devotees are sincere and go on chanting Hare Krishna and following the regulative principles, the movement will be successful. Srila Prabhupada was silent for a moment, especially considering that whatever he said might be his last word, I strained intently to hear. He uttered one word, organization. He paused, and then he whispered, organization and intelligence. I was startled. Prabhupada's words were full of meaning, and they had a profound effect on me. Yes, I realized we must be sincere and chant our 16 rounds and follow the regulative principles, but we are meant to do more than just maintain our spiritual lives. We are meant to preach, to expand the movement, increase the number of devotees, and do that requires organization and intelligence. Prabhupada wanted all of the members of ISKCON to feel a spiritual tension in their lives, to not feel comfortable. And the only time they would feel comfortable was when they were feeling uncomfortable. That was Prabhupada's mood. So I'll stop here. Thank you. If there's any comments or questions, we'll take some.